Nicole hosts Easter every year. That's why she shops at BJ's Wholesale Club, stocking up on spiral ham, baked goods, fresh flowers, candy, and 5 dozen eggs.
I've got a lot of baskets to fill.
Nicole's not worried because she knows she can save big and get it all done in one trip.
It's like winning the Easter egg hunt.
When you save, everyone wins. Get a $15 digital coupon when you spend $150 in one transaction, now through April 5th. Visit BJ's.com/Easter coupon for details. BJ's, your Easter destination.
A child suffering from a debilitating injury is nothing to joke about. It's also something that should never be faked. Faked to such an extreme point that the child believes they are suffering from the disabilities the mother claims she has. Today, the dark story of the disturbed mind and, some would say, justified end to D.D. Blanchard.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the dark side of Wikipedia.
On June 14th, 2015, Greene County Sheriff's deputies in Missouri, United States, found the body of Claudine D.D. Blanchard face down in the bedroom of her house just outside of Springfield, Missouri, lying in a pool of blood and stab wounds inflicted several days earlier. There was no sign of her daughter, Gypsy Rose, who, according to Blanchard, suffered from leukemia, asthma, muscular dystrophy, along with several other chronic conditions, and had the mental capacity of a 7-year-old due to brain damage. She had suffered as a result of her premature birth. After reading troubling Facebook posts earlier in the evening, concerned neighbors notified the police, reporting that Dee Dee might have fallen victim to foul play, and that Gypsy Rose, whose wheelchair and medications were still in the house, might have been abducted. The following day, police found Gypsy Rose in Wisconsin, where she had traveled with her boyfriend, Nicholas Gojon, whom she had met online. When investigators announced that she was actually an adult and not suffering from any of the physical or mental health issues which her mother claimed she had, public outrage over the possible abduction of a severely disabled girl gave way to shock and some sympathy for Gypsy Rose. It is the dark side of Wikipedia. Welcome, my friends. This is one of those stories where you almost kind of root for the killer once you really get a good grasp on how mentally tortured Gypsy Rose was by this horrendous excuse of human flesh that was her mother, D.D. Blanchard. It's a screwed up story all around, but very intriguing. Once you start getting into it, you're like, oh my God, if you made this into a movie that was fake, you would be, this panned is too much. You took too many curves. No one would really do this. And then they made it into a movie and it's like, well, that's pretty screwed up, but real. Tony and Carol Hughes joining you on today's episode of the show.
Yeah, it's really a twisted story. And as we get into it, and if somebody's not familiar with it, I mean, it's got, I don't know. There's no justification to ever kill anyone.
No.
But my thoughts is she didn't ever lead a normal life at all.
Yeah.
So I don't think she had the capability to really think things through. I don't think she'd been educated, the daughter, the way she should have been.
No.
And so my guess is that's the only way she felt like she could get away from her mom.
Sure. I mean, I think if you're raised in the way that this girl was raised, you're not going to get sane thought or rational thought out of it. And when someone literally tortures you your whole life and says you have all these things and you really don't, I don't know. I mean, I quite honestly, if I was in her shoes, I would be very surprised if the story didn't end with me killing the person that did that to me.
Well, I don't think that the daughter knew who she was.
No.
Sounds strange, but her whole life, she was kind of taught to play a character.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, when she gets older and she wants to meet boys and stuff, well, now you can't control her.
It's one of those things where this person is... She missed so many developmental things that were so key to her existence that for the rest of her life, I mean, some of those things, I mean, you can kind of learn, but some of those things, the neurowiring and all that happens at certain ages. And if it's not done remotely correctly, in fact, done in the opposite way you should be doing everything, you can't go back and redo that. So she'll suffer the rest of her life because of the insanity of what her mother did to her. And I'm sure there's probably some sort of, you know, disorder going on there too. I'm sure, you know, but holy shit, you do that to a person, another human being, you know, I don't have much sympathy. I don't care what's going on. There's, you know, there's going to be something that comes back and gets you for that. And it, you know, Gypsy, you know, it wasn't even Gypsy who did the killing, but she was, you know, attributing to it or however they did it with the boyfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a messed up story. Let's jump.
Messed up.
It is. Let's jump into it and hear more of the story of what happened with Dee Dee Blanchard. Further investigations found that some of the doctors who had examined Gypsy Rose had found no evidence of the claimed disorders. One physician suspected that Dee Dee suffered from Mountain Syndrome, by proxy, a mental disorder which causes a parent or other caretaker to exaggerate, fabricate, or induce illness in a person under their care in order to obtain sympathy or attention. Dee Dee had slightly changed her name after her family, who suspected she had poisoned her stepmother, confronted her about how she treated Gypsy Rose. Nonetheless, many people accepted her situation as true, and the two benefited from the efforts of charities such as Habitat for Humanity, Ronald McDonald House, and the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Dee Dee had been making her daughter pass herself off as younger and pretend to be disabled and chronically ill, subjecting her to unnecessary surgery and medication, and controlling her through physical and psychological abuse. Dr. Mark Felden, an international expert on fictitious disorders, stated that this was the first case he had experienced in which an abused child killed an abusive parent. Gypsy Rose pled guilty to second-degree murder and is serving a 10-year sentence after a brief trial in November of 2018. Gojan was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Early life and marriage of Dee Dee Blanchard. It's like this. She was born in Claude Pitre in Chuck Bay, Louisiana, near the Gulf Coast in 1967, and grew up with her family nearby Golden Meadow. Blanchard was a daughter of Claude Anthony Pitre and Emily's Louis Gisclair. She had five siblings. During her childhood, relatives recalled and occasionally engaged in petty theft, often as a form of retaliation when things did not go her way. At some point, early in her adult life, she worked as a nurse's aide. The family expressed suspicion that in 1997, she might have killed her own mother by denying her food. When she was 24, she became pregnant by Rod Blanchard, then 17. They named her daughter Gypsy Rose because Claudine liked the name Gypsy, and Rod was a fan of Guns N' Roses. Shortly before Gypsy Rose's birth in July 1991, the couple separated when Rod, as he said in 2017, realized he got married for the wrong reasons. Despite Claudine's efforts to get him to return, he did not, and she took her newborn daughter to live with her family. According to Rod, who remained involved with his daughter at this point, by the time Gyp, as she was known in her extended family, was 3 months old, her mother was convinced that the infant suffered from sleep apnea and began taking her to the hospital, where repeated overnight stays with a sleep monitor and other tests found no sign of the condition. Nevertheless, he recalls, Claudine became convinced that Gypsy had a wide range of health issues, which she attributed to an unspecified chromosomal disorder. When Gypsy was 7 or 8, she recalls, she was riding on her grandfather's motorcycle when they were involved in a minor accident. She suffered an abrasion to her knee, which her mother said was a visible sign of injuries that would require several surgeries to treat properly. Then on, Gypsy, who had already been made to use a walker, was confined to a wheelchair, although she was healthy enough to walk on her own. Gypsy often went with her parents to Special Olympics events. In 2001, when Dee Dee claimed Gypsy was 8, she was actually 10, she was named the honorary queen of the crew of Mid-City, a child-oriented parade held during Mardi Gras in New Orleans. Gypsy seems to have stopped going to school after second grade, possibly even as early as kindergarten. Her mother homeschooled her after that, supposedly because her illnesses were so severe. Gypsy managed to learn to read on her own, though, and the Harry Potter books. While Gypsy's father, Rod, had remarried, Claudine moved in with her father and stepmother. They would later claim that Claudine, when preparing food for her stepmother, poisoned it with Roundup weed killer, leading to her own chronic illness during this period. During that time, she was arrested for several minor offenses, including writing bad checks. When the Petries began to regularly confront her about her treatment of Gypsy and express suspicion about her role in her stepmom's health, she left with Gypsy for a slight L. Her stepmother's health returned to normal shortly afterwards. In Slidell, she and Gypsy lived in public housing. They paid their bills with public assistance. Claudine had been granted due to her daughter's supposed medical conditions and Rod's child support payments. They spent most of their time visiting various specialists, mostly at Tulane Medical Center and the Children's Hospital of New Orleans, seeking treatment for the illness Claudine claimed Gypsy suffered from, which she now said included hearing and vision problems. While a muscle biopsy found no sign of the muscular dystrophy Claudine insisted Gypsy had, she was successful in securing treatment for her daughter's other purported issues. After she told doctors Gypsy had seizures every few months, they prescribed anti-seizure medication. Several surgeries were performed on her during this time, and Claudine regularly took Gypsy to the emergency room for minor ailments. After Hurricane Katrina devastated the area in August of 2005, Claudine and Gypsy left their ruined apartment for a shelter in Covington, set up for individuals with special needs. Claudine said Gypsy's medical records, including her birth certificate, had been destroyed in the flooding. A doctor there from the Ozarks suggested they relocate to her native Missouri. And the next month, they were airlifted there. At first, Claudine and Gypsy lived in a rented home in Aurora in the southwestern area of the state. Despite their time there, Gypsy was honored by the Ole Foundation, which advocates for the rights of feeding tube recipients. As of 2007, Child of the Year, and 2008, Habitat for Humanity built them a small home with a wheelchair ramp and hot tub as part of a larger project on the north side of Springfield. To the east, they moved there. A story of a single mother with a severely disabled daughter forced to flee Katrina's devastation received considerable local media attention, and the community often pitched in to help the woman who now went by Claudina Blanchard, to whom they knew as Dee Dee. The outpouring of support included a great deal of charitable contributions. In Louisiana, mother and daughter had at most availed themselves of occasional stays in Ronald McDonald houses during medical appointments. In Missouri, they received free flights to see doctors in Kansas City, free trips to Walt Disney World, and backstage passes to Miranda Lambert concerts, where she was frequently photographed with a singer via the Make-A-Wish Foundation. In addition to the house Habitat built for them, Rod Blanchard also continued to make monthly child support payments of $1,200, as well as sending Gypsy gifts and occasionally talking to her on the phone. During one call on her 18th birthday, he recalls Dee Dee telling him not to mention her daughter's real age since she thinks she's 14. Rod and his second wife regularly hoped to get to Springfield and visit, but for a variety of reasons, Dee Dee would change plans. She told her neighbors in Springfield that Gypsy Rose's father was an abusive drug addict and alcoholic who had never come to terms with his daughter's health issues and never sent them any money. Many people who met Gypsy were charmed by her. Her 5-foot height, nearly toothless mouth, large glasses, and high, childlike voice reinforced the perception that she had all the problems her mother said she did. She often wore wigs or hats to cover her baldness. Her mother regularly shaved Gypsy's head to mimic the hairless appearance of a chemotherapy patient, allegedly telling Gypsy that since her medication would eventually cause her hair to fall out, it was best just to shave it in advance. When they left the house, Dee Dee often took an oxygen tank and feeding tube with them. Gypsy was fed the children's liquid nutrition supplement, Pediasure, well into her 20s. Dee Dee used physical abuse to control her daughter, always holding her daughter's hand in the presence of others. Whenever Gypsy said something that either suggested she was not really sick or seemed above her purported mental capabilities, Gypsy recalls that her mother would give her a very tight squeeze. When the two were alone, Dee Dee would strike her open hands or a coat hanger. Medical interventions continued. Dee Dee had some of Gypsy's saliva glands treated with Botox and then extracted altogether to control her drooling, which Gypsy later claimed her mother had induced by using a topical anesthetic to numb her gums before doctor's visits. The lack of salivary glands, coupled with side effects of the anti-seizure medication she was given, caused Gypsy's teeth to decay to the point that the majority of her front teeth were extracted and replaced by a bridge. Tubes were implanted in her ears to control her myriad of purported ear infections. So, yeah, I understand why she was part of killing her own mother.
But it's so sad that she never got to just be a kid.
It's horrible.
Be a person.
And that she will never really know what that feels like because of the insane abuse she suffered.
Taken away from her.
Yeah.
And it's all, you know, when you think about it, it's all just selfishly motivated by her mother, because her mom got a free house and trips and tons of attention because she's the mother with a sick daughter.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, because I think they did say that she had, or they suspected she had the Munchausen syndrome.
Which she probably did. But the thing is, she was still very cognizant of all the shit she was doing. I mean, she knew she was manipulating people even before that. I mean, just the manipulative, horrible behavior that had nothing to do with the Munchausen.
What was it, her stepmother?
Yeah. I think we have more like sociopath or something like that going on here, even more so than Munchausen, just because you believe your insanity. I don't know that this woman believed it. I think she feared it. I think she feared being caught. I think she feared having her comfort level messed with, because she had everything under control to such an insane level that she literally, you know, made her daughter lose all of her teeth and basically sit there like a troll for all those years. I mean, it's horrible. I mean, it's anyone else that would be looked at as doing that, you'd be like, okay. I mean, I'm honestly surprised that the prison sentences were as strict as they were in this case. I think that boyfriend was pretty not the brightest bulb, but still, I think he was acting in mercy to save someone in a vigilante aspect almost. And I know that that is illegal, but I don't think it calls for life in prison. I don't think this kid would have been a murderer or a risk to society and all the, you know, other than maybe not being very bright, but he didn't seem like he's a cold-blooded killer. I don't know. I mean,
I hardly doubt she would have let her daughter move out and move on with him.
Exactly. I mean,
her meal ticket.
110%. So you have to wonder, you know, this, you know, person is thinking the only way to save this person's life is to, because obviously there's been attention from hospitals. There's been attentions from authorities. There's been all those things that you would say, call the police, go to a doctor. They did all that. The doctors enabled it all and were completely bamboozled by it. And the police can only go in and do so much until there's proof. And, it was almost like a crime of passion in one sense of it, where it's, I'm going to save you. And she was complicit in it too. But it's like, what the fuck do you expect a human being to do after you do that to someone? If you sat there and abused your dog in any way that we just described there, would you not expect that dog to try and kill you in your sleep every chance it got? I mean, it goes down to human just basic emotions at some point.
Well,
going
that Gypsy, which is such a weird name.
Yeah.
For a to name your baby that. I just think it's weird. Anyway, but she didn't have the mental capabilities.
No.
Now, I'm not saying that she was mentally disabled in any way. She might not have been at all.
Yeah.
But she had no education.
She was denied the ability to develop
what normal life was.
Oh. And
it was such an extreme abuse.
It literally comes down to, I think, the most basic form of just, you know, fight or flight. And the only way that she could flight is by killing. And she found a way to do that. And I think she knew no other way. And in reality, I don't know that there would have been much of another. I mean, she was older, but still, I mean, you've been so brainwashed. I don't know if there's any other way that this girl would have gotten out of the grips of this mother other than more time. And meaning like she just obviously is not a child anymore. And she can't be pulling that story that much more. But at that point, my guess it would be a fun murder-suicide that Dee Dee would have pulled off just to end it because her show would have come to a close.
Mm-hmm.
So by killing Dee Dee, I think that they saved the life of Gypsy, whatever semblance of life that she'll get, you know, after all of this. You know, you wish her the best, but my God, you know, you're someone like that that ends up missing such key parts of life for development, you feel horrible for him. So let's continue on here.
It's a really sad story.
Into the story where we start to get to some suspicions of deceptiveness. Bernardo Flattenstein, a pediatric neurologist who saw Gypsy in Springfield, became suspicious of her muscular dystrophy diagnosis. He ordered MRIs and blood tests, which found no abnormalities. "I don't see any reason why she doesn't walk," he told Dee Dee on a follow-up visit after seeing Gypsy stand and support her own weight. Flattenstein noted that Dee Dee was not a good historian. After contacting Gypsy's doctors in New Orleans, he learned that Gypsy's original muscle biopsy had come back negative, undermining Dee Dee's self-reported diagnosis of muscular dystrophy, as well as her claim that all Gypsy's records have been destroyed by flooding. He suspected the possibility of Munchausen syndrome by proxy. Dee Dee contrived to gain access to Flattenstein's notes and subsequently stopped taking Gypsy to see him. Flattenstein did not follow up by reporting Dee Dee to social services. He said he had been told by other doctors to treat the pair with golden gloves and doubted the authorities would believe him anyway. In 2009, an anonymous caller told the police about Dee Dee's use of different names and birth dates for herself and her daughter and suggested Gypsy was in better health and claimed. Officers who performed the resulting wellness check accepted Dee Dee's explanation that she used the misinformation to make it harder for her abusive ex-husband to find her and Gypsy without talking to Rod and reported that Gypsy seemed to genuinely be mentally handicapped. The file was closed. Dee Dee seemed to have at least one forged copy of her daughter's birth certificate, moving her birth date from 1995 to bolster claims that she was still a teenager. Gypsy said in a later interview that for 15 years she was not sure of her legal age. She sometimes also claimed that the original had been destroyed during the post-Katrina flooding. Dee Dee did not keep another copy with Gypsy's actual birth date. Her daughter recalls seeing it during one of her hospital visits and becoming confused. Dee Dee told her it was a misprint. Since 2001, Gypsy had attended science fiction and fantasy conventions, sometimes in costumes, since she could blend in, even in her wheelchair. At an event in 2011, she made what may have been another escape attempt that ended when her mother found her in a hotel room with a man she had met online. Again, Dee Dee produced the paperwork giving Gypsy's false younger birth date and threatened to inform the police. Gypsy recalls that afterwards, Dee Dee smashed her computer with a hammer and threatened to do the same to her fingers if she ever tried to escape again. She also kept Gypsy leashed and handcuffed to her bed for 2 weeks. Dee Dee later told Gypsy that she had filed paperwork with the police claiming that Gypsy was mentally incompetent, leading Gypsy to believe that if she attempted to go to the police for help, they would not believe her. Sometime around 2012, Gypsy, who continued to use the internet after her mother had gone to bed to avoid her tightened supervision, made contact online with Nicholas Godjohn, a man around her age from Big Bend, Wisconsin. She said they met on a Christian singles group. Godjohn had some issues of his own, a criminal record for indecent exposure and a history of mental illness, stating at times to be either dissociative identity disorder or autism. In 2014, Gypsy confided to Aaliyah Woodmansey, a 23-year-old neighbor who was unaware that Gypsy was close to her own age, considered herself a big sister, and she and Godjohn had discussed eloping and had even chosen names for potential children. Gypsy, who had 5 separate Facebook accounts, and Godjohn flirted online. Their exchange is sometime using BDSM elements, which Gypsy has since claimed was more what he was interested in. Woodmansey tried to talk her out of it, still thinking Gypsy was too young and possibly being taken advantage of by an online sexual predator. She considered Gypsy's plans just fantasies and dreams, and nothing like this would ever really take place. Despite Dee Dee's efforts to prevent her from using the internet, which went as far as destroying her daughter's phone and laptop, she maintained contact with Godjohn, who saved printouts of the post Gypsy shared, until 2014. The next year, Gypsy arranged and paid for Godjohn to meet her mother in Springfield. Her plan was for him to just bump into her while she and Dee Dee were at a movie theater, both of them in costume, and apparently strike up a relationship that way. Then for her to introduce him to her mother. As soon as they did meet in person for the first time, Godjohn says Gypsy led him to the bathroom where the two had sex. The two continued their internet interactions and began developing their plan to kill Dee Dee. Again, this guy, he obviously is suffering from his own disabilities. And in his, you know, math, if you will, of the situation, it added up to him too, saying, the only way I'm going to save this person is to kill this horrible, horrible, evil woman that is holding this person hostage. I don't think he deserves life in prison.
You know, I mean, he did kill her, and I'm sure it was premeditated.
Sure.
Because it sounds like it probably was.
But how could you not premeditate that? I
mean, and had those two people never come together,
yeah,
he probably wouldn't have killed anyone. I don't know.
Yeah.
But then she has no coping skills. She has no problem-solving skills.
None, no.
She has, you know, so anybody could manipulate her into anything they wanted.
Yeah.
You know, she's, oh, it's just sad.
It's, it is a crazy, crazy story.
How can you do that to your own kid? You know, because, you know, you have children and you want them to grow up and succeed and be happy in this world. And instead, you know, you tell your daughter she's sick and she can't walk, and it's a lie. Her whole life was a lie.
You physically go out of your way to give her physical ailments and surgeries that are not needed, and that you're physically harming and altering your daughter, teeth falling out, surgeries, drugs that are dangerous to be taking if you don't need them. That she was a fucking Dee Dee Blanchard. If we're talking about someone here who is a murderer, it's Dee Dee Blanchard. I mean, there's so many ways that she could have gotten her daughter killed with what she was trying to do. All for her own narcissism is utterly insane. I know. It's horrible. I mean, that's where I walk away from this one going, thank God this woman is dead. I mean, because what else? I mean, had Dee Dee or had Gypsy gotten away, what would her next scheme be on the society of the world? Who else would she have taken advantage of?
There would have to be another scheme, because that's how she got by.
That'd be the next thing.
She didn't work.
And eventually Gypsy would maybe get away or something. But then Dee Dee would go to another city and start something else. And she would make other, she would ruin other people's lives. Mm-hmm. So that's where I look at that and go, this is someone who's going to do nothing but harm to other human beings. What is their point in existing? And it may sound harmless or horrible, but I just don't get it. When they're doing something that horrible, I mean, this is, I mean, it almost sounds like Nazi torture shit, you know, but it's all this weird narcissistic control thing that her mom has going on. I mean, you wouldn't, these things would like defy the Geneva Convention. It's just fucked up. So it's like zero sympathy there for that woman. Happy she's dead. Let's continue into the story and into the ultimate demise of Dee Dee Blanchard. Go, John returned to Springfield in June of 2015, arriving while Gypsy and her mother were away at a doctor's appointment. After they returned home and Dee Dee had gone to sleep, he went to the Blanchard house. Gypsy allowed him in and allegedly gave him duct tape, gloves, and a knife with the understanding that he would use it to murder Dee Dee. Gypsy claimed later that she did not expect him to be able to do it. Gypsy hid in the bathroom and covered her ears so that she would not have to hear her mother screaming. Gojon then stabbed Dee Dee several times in her back while she was asleep. The two had sex in Gypsy's room and took $4,000 in cash that Dee Dee had been keeping in the house, mostly for her ex-husband's child support checks. They fled to a motel outside Springfield where they stayed for a few days while planning their next move. During that time, they were seen on security cameras on several local stores. Gypsy said at that point she believed the two had managed to get away with their crime. They mailed the murder weapon back to Gojon's home in Wisconsin to avoid being caught with it. Then took a bus there. Several witnesses saw the pair on their way to the Greyhound station and noted that Gypsy wore a blonde wig and walked unassisted. After seeing a concerning Facebook status posted from Dee Dee's account, the Blanchard's friends suspected something was not right. When police calls went unanswered, several of them went to the house. While they knew that the two often left on medical trips unannounced, they saw that Dee Dee's Nissan Cube, modified to hold Gypsy's wheelchair, was still in the driveway, making that explanation unlikely. Protective film on the windows made it hard to see inside in the low light. No one answered the door, so they called 911. When the police arrived, they had to wait for a search warrant to be issued before they could enter, but they allowed one of the neighbors present to climb through a window where they saw that the inside of the house was largely undisturbed and that all of Gypsy's wheelchairs were still present. When the warrant was issued, police entered the house and soon found Dee Dee's body. A GoFundMe account was set up to pay for her funeral expenses and possibly Gypsy's. All who knew the Blanchards feared the worst, even if Gypsy had not been harmed. They believed she would be helpless without her wheelchair, medications, and support equipment like the oxygen tanks and feeding tubes. Woodmansey, who was among those gathered on Blanchard's lawn, told police that she knew about Gypsy and her secret online boyfriend. She showed them the printout she had saved, which included his name. Based on that information, police asked Facebook to trace the IP address from which the post to Dee Dee's account had been made. It turned out to be in Wisconsin. The next day, police agencies in Waukesha County raided the Gojon's Big Bend home. Both he and Gypsy surrendered and were taken into custody on charges of murder and felony armed criminal action. The news that Gypsy was safe was greeted with relief back in Springfield, where she and Gojon were soon extradited and held for $1 million bond. But in announcing the news, Greene County Sheriff Jim Arnott warned things are not always what they appear. The media in Springfield soon reported the truth of the Blanchard's lives, that Gypsy had never been sick and had always been able to walk, but her mother had made her pretend otherwise, using physical abuse to control her. Arnott urged people not to donate any money to the family until investigators learned the extent of the fraud. After the disclosure of how Dee Dee had treated Gypsy all those years, sympathy for her as a victim of a violent murder rapidly shifted to her daughter as a long-term victim of child abuse. While the charge of first-degree murder can carry the death penalty under Missouri law or life without parole, County Prosecutor Dan Patterson soon announced he would not seek either for Gypsy or Gojon, calling the case extraordinary and unusual. After her attorney obtained her medical records from Louisiana, he secured a plea bargain to second-degree murder for Gypsy. So, unnourished was Gypsy that during the year she was in the county jail, he told BuzzFeed later, she actually gained 14 pounds in contrast to most of his clients who lose weight in that situation. In July 2015, she accepted the plea bargain agreement and was sentenced to 10 years in prison. Gojon still faced the more severe charge because prosecutors contended that he initiated the murder plot, and both he and Gypsy agreed that he was the one who actually killed Dee Dee. Her plea bargain agreement did not require her to testify against him. In January 2017, his trial was postponed, and prosecutors requested a second psychiatric exam. His lawyers contended that he was an intelligence, quote, of 82, and is on the autism spectrum, suggesting that he has diminished capacity. He has initially waived his right to a trial by jury, but changed his mind in June of that year. In December of 2017, the judge at Gojon's trial for November of 2018, in their opening statement, prosecutors alleged that Gojon had deliberated for over a year before the crime, while his lawyers pointed to his autism and said that Gypsy had formulated the crime and their lovestruck client had done just as she had asked. The next day, prosecutors showed jurors the text messages, sometimes sexually explicit, that Gypsy and Gojon shared the week before the murder, often using various personas, as well as the knife which he had used to commit the murder. In some of the texts, he asked for details about Dee Dee's room and sleeping habits. These were supplemented by video of his interview with police after his arrest, where he admitted having killed her. Gypsy testified on the trial's third day. She said that while she had indeed suggested to Gojon that he killed Dee Dee to end her mother's abuse, she'd also considered getting pregnant by him in the hope that once she was carrying Gojon's child, Dee Dee would have to accept him, along with a knife that she eventually gave to Gojon. She stole baby clothes from Walmart during a shopping trip so she could go ahead with either plan. However, she said Gojon never told her what he thought about the pregnancy plan. After 4 days, the case was sent to the jury. Jurors had the option of finding Gojon not guilty or guilty of one of three murder charges: involuntary manslaughter, second-degree murder, or first-degree murder. After approximately 2 hours of deliberation, they returned with a verdict, and Gojon was found guilty of first-degree murder and armed criminal action. In February of 2019, he was sentenced to life in prison for the murder conviction, the only possible option since prosecutors had declined to seek the death penalty. Gojon asked Judge David Jones for leniency on the armed criminal action charge, which carries a minimum sentence of only 3 years, saying that he had fallen blindly in love with Gypsy. He received a sentence of 25 years on that charge, which is concurrent with the life sentence. Jones also denied a motion by Gojon's lawyer, Dwayne Perry, for a new trial. Perry argued that the jury should not have been allowed to hear that Gojon had considered raping Dee Dee on the night of the murder. And he also argued that the state's psychologist should not have been allowed to testify, while Gojon's psychologist should have, to establish that he had diminished capacity. The judge, in denying the motion, conceded that an appeals court could find the latter point significant and consider it a reversible error. The neighbors, who had always looked out for the mother and daughter, engaged in considerable soul-searching about how they had been deceived. Aaliyah Woodmansey, whose information about Gypsy's relationship with Gojon led police to the couple the day after Dee Dee's body was discovered, said she cried out of disbelief upon hearing that Gypsy had never been sick or disabled. Her mother recalled how everyone had accepted Dee Dee's claims without asking for proof, and wondered if the mother and daughter had secretly been laughing at their neighbor's naivete. Kim Blatchard, of no relation, who had called the deputy sheriff to the house the night before, said, "What have I been believing? How could I have been so stupid?" Despite their disclosure, 60 people attended a candlelight vigil Blanchard organized for Dee Dee in downtown Springfield the night after the body was discovered. "In Springfield, we're a giving community. We surround people with love and finances that we believe need it," Sheriff Arnott said at his news conference announcing the truth of Blanchard's story. "However, a lot of times we are deceived, and I think this is now so true in this case at hand. Only one of the charities that had helped them spoke about the case. A spokesman for Habitat for Humanity, whose volunteers had built the Blanchard's house, along with others on that street, said, "We're just really deeply saddened by the whole situation." It was, however, too early to tell whether Dee Dee had too easily deceived the organization. I don't think I'd like to be the person on the end of that call when you're within the charitable organization and you are the one that said, "Hey, we should really help out this family." And then this ends up being what happened with this family. Although there's probably a lot of leniency there going, well, everybody thought it was what it
everybody
was.
Everybody did. Yeah. And that's not a big town. And I know people who lived there during that.
Yeah.
And a lot of people reached out to help them, and, you know, radio stations did benefits and things. And, you know, they kind of felt sorry for him.
Did you ever go to a Miranda Lambert concert in Springfield?
No.
Okay. I was going to say, you may have very well been at a Miranda Lambert concert where one of those meet and greets happened with Dee Dee, but she usually played Wichita either before or right after Springfield. So, yeah, you probably just...
That's just so... Yeah. All of it's so strange. And the thing is that if you see pictures of her, she looked very sick.
Yeah.
And she looked very young.
Mm-hmm.
And she spoke in this little, thin, high voice.
Yeah.
And so I think, because you look at her, you can so easily buy into it.
You would.
And by nature, a lot of us want to help.
Of course. You know? Yeah, I mean, by nature, you would think this is a great, you know, thing you can help with. And these people are suffering, and it's a horrible thing. And I guess, you know, it's... We're in a world where you, unfortunately, you have to question so many things, and how on earth we're to the point where we have to question the legitimacy of someone's child with disabilities when you see the way they're presenting it. Like, I just want to be sure you're not making this shit up. But unfortunately, I wonder if there's new protocols and such in place in some of these organizations, the charitable organizations, where it's like, okay, we'd like to help you, but we would like you to be examined by one of our physicians. You know, something like that, you know, just to be sure we don't end up with another Dee Dee Blanchard situation. I wonder if that goes on now, where they have to because of some of these things. It's like when you look.
I bet that she was so good at talking about it, because, you know, a lot of women who have Munchausen, like, they read up on it. They know these diseases.
Yeah.
And they know what they're doing.
Yeah. It's fucked up. It's the scary thing is, it's like, okay, so this is out there in the news, and you can, you know, read and see the whole story. Well, most of us walk away from that going, oh my God, that's like an example of how not to be a human being. There's a bunch of people that are taking that as a how-to guide. It's like, I make that joke sometime, like where you show a child, episode of To Catch a Predator with Chris Hansen. And it's like, this should be a cautionary tale. This should not be like, this is how you pick up men. But the thing is, some people's minds will take it the other direction. And it's like, what the fuck are you doing? And
I think most people that knew them and now know the whole story.
Yeah.
Can look back and go, I should have known then.
Sure.
Or I should have known then, because that wasn't right.
But what are you going to say?
Like, saying that, because this wasn't in the 80s or 70s.
No.
Like, to say that all of her medical records were lost in a flood. Well, you know, they're electronic and they're in the cloud somewhere.
Yeah.
Her birth certificate was lost in a flood. No, I can write Georgia and get mine.
And that's the thing. I mean, how they were given passes on so many of these excuses. And why was, I mean, I get it. I mean, if you're talking with a friend, I mean, what are you going to do? Like, sit there. Well, I was lost in the flood. Really? Prove it. Prove it now, bitch. but if you're the doctor's office, or you're some sort of medical organization or anything where there's a transaction of some sort going on of significant value, I would think those would be the places where it's like, well, no, all you have to do is write into this doctor's office and you get these transcribed. You don't need the physical ones anymore. Or we can call the state and we can get that. Or you need to call and do that, please. Thank you. And if you can't do that, then I'm sorry, we can't help you. But we do require these things just to prove that you're who you say you are. And
well, my guess is that, you know, as time went on, you know, doctors would catch on.
Yeah.
So then she would go to a different doctor and then she would tell him, like, yeah, she has MS or whatever it was that she was it MS. What?
Yeah.
Muscular dystrophy.
Yeah. There was, so, yeah, muscular dystrophy. There were several that she claimed she had.
So then this doctor is like, yeah, I don't think so. And then he runs some tests and no, she doesn't. Well, you think she's going to go back to that doctor again?
No.
And in the meantime, the doctors can't go around and say, hey, you know, she's not sick. Because you can't. You can't disclose people's
HIPAA laws,
records.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, here's this one of the scarier parts of this, the surgeries that she had performed on her. What the fuck are you doing this surgery on if there's no identifiable problems other than this person is claiming this has happened? Don't you have to, like, if it's a surgery, physically see
the drooling thing? So she was making her drool. So then they're we'll take her
Well, that was a Botox injection. I mean, you could get a Botox injection for almost anything.
Yeah.
But the surgeries are different. That, I mean, that's like, we're going to cut you open, we're going to do this and that. Like, that's like, what the... How does that even
practice?
How do you get there? You know, I mean, if the doctor's saying, look, there's no physical abnormalities here, we're not going to do a surgery because there's nothing to be doing surgery on. It would be like saying, I have a tumor in my leg, and then everybody's looking and you get scanned 500 times. There's no tumor in your leg, but no, there's a tumor. Operate. I mean, the doctor we'll cut your leg open, we'll take a little chunk of muscle out and call it a tumor. You know, I mean, what the fuck is that? Who's doing that? How are you doing that? Am I misunderstanding this in some way?
I don't think so. Unless she just said that she'd had the surgeries. Did she for real really have them?
That's a question too. I mean, you have to wonder about that too. I mean, if there's a record of the surgery, I'd love to know what it was and how the fuck that happened. I mean, that just seems, that to me, it's like, wow.
But I don't think anybody would ever release that information.
No, I mean, because it would still be under HIPAA. The only person who really technically, excuse me, have it would be Gypsy or anyone who would be in, you know, like the, what is it when there's an adult
Like a caretaker.
Yeah. Something almost like what Britney Spears has over her. I forget the name.
Free Britney.
I know. That sort of a thing. Conservatorship.
She's a girl somehow. You know, she's old enough. She needs to have charge of her own life.
Britney is my age.
If Britney can't, she needs help. You know?
Exactly.
Is she getting the help she needs? That's my question.
It seems much more like there's somebody that just enjoys cashing the paychecks and keep. I mean, in some ways, less extreme than this. Sometimes that conservatorship thing can be almost somewhat parallel to this in several ways. Not necessarily torturing the person, but torturing in mental ways. I could say in some cases, maybe started out with good intent, but at some point, something's got to give.
Somebody... I don't think in this particular case, though, with Dee Dee and Gypsy, there was never good intent.
No, not at all. This was crazy.
She found a way to not have to work and get a lot of shit given to her and get everybody's attention and sympathy. And, oh, poor you. You have it so rough. And, you know, you try so hard with your daughter.
Yeah.
And even though everything's a lie, she loved it.
She ate it up. That was her fuel for her insane fire. One more chapter here as we dive into the insane world of that which was Dee Dee Blanchard. Dee Dee's family in Louisiana, who had confronted her about her treatment of gypsies years before, did not regret her death. Her father, stepmother, and nephew, who first shared details of Gypsy's actual health when she was first confined to a wheelchair, all later said that Dee Dee deserved her fate and Gypsy had been punished as much as she needed to be. None of them would pay for her funeral or even pick up her ashes. Her father and stepmother ultimately flushed them down the toilet. Bravo! Bravo to them, I must say.
What?
Rod Blanchard, Gypsy's father, is less critical. I think Dee Dee's problem was started a web of lies, and there was no escaping after. He told BuzzFeed, "It was like a tornado got started. He was happy the first time he saw a video of Gypsy walking under her own power." Gypsy Rose, "I feel like I'm more free in prison than with living with my mom, because now I'm allowed to just live like a normal woman." That was her quote in January 4th of 2018. Gypsy's now serving sentences in Missouri's correctional center. She did not talk to the media until after she made her plea. When she did, she told BuzzFeed reporter Michelle Dean that she had been able to research Munchausen syndrome by proxy on prison computers and her mother had every symptom. "I think she would have been the perfect mom for someone that actually was sick," she said. She believed Dee Dee's claim that she had cancer, even though she knew she could walk and eat solid food, leading her to assent to the regular head shavings. However, she always hoped that doctors would see through the ruse, and she was frustrated that none besides Platterstein did. When Dean asked her what made her want to escape her situation, Gypsy recalled the 2011 incident at the science fiction convention, which made her wonder why she was not allowed to have friends like others of her age. Well, she said that Gojan took the idle discussions of murder into reality. She accepts that she committed a crime and has to live with the consequences. Nonetheless, she feels freer in prison than she was before and hopes to help other abused victims. Victims of Munchausen by proxy abuse often avoid doctors and hospitals in their later lives because of lingering trust issues, according to expert Mark Feldman. According to her family, Dean and Carr, Gypsy also exhibits at times the same sociopathic manipulative behaviors as her mother, who was for much of her life her only role model. "She's already psychologically really compromised, and she's going to need as much family underpinning and support as she can get," Feldman told Vulture after viewing Carr's documentary, in which he appears. He also points out that post-traumatic stress disorder is likely to be an issue in her continuing development. "I hope they find someone, somewherever she chooses to settle, who is willing to provide supportive psychotherapy." Dr. Flatterstein, the pediatric neurologist who believed Gypsy was fully capable of walking on her own, and wrote in his notes that he suspected Munchausen by proxy, says it was only the second such possible case he had ever come across. He learned of Dee Dee's murder at the hands of Gypsy and her boyfriend later in 2015 when a former nurse emailed him the news of the story. "Poor Gypsy," he said. "She suffered all those years and for no reason." He told Dean he wished he could have done more. Feldman, in talking about Carr's documentary with Vulture, faults Carr for making Flatterstein appear to be the hero in the story. "He had a gross misunderstanding of his obligation as a physician, as well as the legal requirements to report suspected abuse or neglect," Feldman said. The film accepts Flatterstein's claim that he was only required to make a report to Child Protective Services in the latter instance, but according to Feldman, once he had included Munchausen by proxy in his list of possible diagnoses, he was obligated to make the report. This conundrum arises in case after case where innumerable doctors have evaluated the patient, perhaps had questions they kept to themselves, and just proceeded to treat or make referrals to ditch the case that way. While a formal diagnosis of Munchausen by proxy for Dee Dee is technically impossible since she's dead, Feldman told the Springfield News leader of Gypsy's guilty plea that he could confidently say Dee Dee had it based on what he knew about the case. Gypsy was infantilized and kept away from her peers, he said. She was little more than a tool for Dee Dee to navigate through the world the way she wanted to. He said it was unprecedented. The 24 years he's been researching the disorder for an abused child to have killed the abusive parent as Gypsy did. There you go. That's how the story of Dee Dee Blanchard ends up.
That is messed up. I was thinking about that. When she does get out of prison, there's a whole nother set of problems.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the poor human being that is Gypsy Blanchard, I hope there's something that she can do with her life that brings her satisfaction and joy and does not harm others. And, you know, where they said, you know, that she shows, you know, signs of the same sort of disorders. Well, of course she does. It's all that she was brought up around. It's nurture. And that's what she's going to have to deal with and learn to fight off. You know, maybe she'll end up being a very, very big victims advocate someday for people that are victims of this and make more people aware that this sort of thing exists out there, because this is just one that got caught and everybody's like, oh, you know, we have suspicions a lot here and there, but I've never seen it like this. Well, you never see it like that because it never gets caught. When it gets caught, I mean, how many, you know, of these things are out there? Maybe not necessarily to this extreme extent where she like was seeking out media attention to such an extreme extent, but more so just the quiet ones in the house with the kids that you really don't see very much and the mother that you never really see other than maybe catching at the grocery store every once in a while. But, you know, there's something really weird going on here. I mean, how much of that is going on out there that we never know about? And then these kids either get old or escape at some point, and then we look at them like they're crazy people because, well, they've been brought up to be crazy people, but it's really not their fault. And it's all a product of this horrid abuse that they were living under. I think there's more of it out there than people realize.
Which is really sad to say.
Yeah. I mean, the way that people have this fucked up ability to believe their own delusions and lies. I mean, hell, we see a hell of a lot of it now. And it's this disconnect from reality. I mean, it can go to such extremes as this, but, you know, it can start small. And I think once you start going down that road, I don't know how much going back there is sometimes for people, because it's like, oh, this is comfortable. This works. I can do this. It's like, yeah, you can do this. The rest of us can't. They can't deal with you either. But I think there's more of it going on out there than we realize. I'm going to look up more on this disorder and see if there's other high-profile cases that we could talk about.
But I don't think that this story would have ever had a happy or even an okay ending.
No.
Because I don't know what that would have looked like.
I think it would have been an unsolved mystery. I think it would have been a murder-suicide. But why did Dee Dee Blanchard kill herself and her daughter? Yeah. When all of this, you know, and then they'll be like, these doctors, well, we suspected that maybe she didn't have this, but you'll never know because they're both dead. And I think that's where it would have ended, where it's like, was this really what happened? Or, you know, or was it? Here, there's a chance for her to have a life of some semblance of normalcy.
And yeah, because she was always going to be controlled by her mother.
Otherwise, I think it just would have ended in death. It would have been a murder-suicide.
And then once she gets, you know, an adult.
Yeah.
You know, she's not a cute young child anymore, and nobody seems to care.
And would Dee Dee stand for that, to let her daughter grow up and go out there? No. That's where I go to, she would have killed her daughter and she would have killed herself. And that's probably how that would have ended. Mm-hmm. And everyone would be like, what the hell? You know, like, oh, and initially it would be like, oh, the stress was just too great and she lost it. And then doctors maybe start speaking a little bit more. And then, you know, it ends up being a Netflix miniseries. Like, you're totally perplexed on how did this happen? You know, more than like even how this one played out. But at least here we have some answers at the end of the day. And Gypsy has a chance at something. So that's going to wrap up today's episode of The Dark Side of Wikipedia. I've wanted to do this one for so long. I don't know why we haven't. If you like the show, please press subscribe, whatever platform it is you listen to us on. We greatly appreciate that. A review on Apple Podcasts helps us tremendously in those rankings. So please take 30 seconds, say something nice, give us some stars, and then go on and have that ham sandwich for lunch. You deserve it. You do. That'll be my new sign-off every week on this show. It's going to be have that tuna salad. I'll change the sandwich up weekly. Until next time, for Carol and all of us at Dark Side of Wikipedia, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you for listening.